Remember, if you bought a house anywhere but Santa Barbara, you didn't pay enough. Got a text on my comments about daylight savings time saying that I'll probably have my 15 minutes of fame during the daylight savings hour and nobody will know. Neil Kalin, when we first started the program in 1998, he was on. And at that point in time, I would say he was one of 13 California Association of Realtors, 13 attorneys working for the California Association of Realtors. But I think that's changed. Welcome back to Radio Real Estate, Neil Kalin.
Thank you very much. Nice to be here. Nice to be on the line with you.
It's always great to talk to you. I know your schedule has gotten busier and busier, so I always appreciate you being able to fit us in.
Well, it seems like the more attorneys we get on staff at CAR, the more work I have to do. I don't know how it's working that way, but that's what's happening.
That is odd. So I'm correct. At one time it was one of 13, and now it's one of 400. What is it?
I think with the legal department is divided into two sections. I think there's about 20 or 21 attorneys total working for staff.
Good.
Working for CAR.
Good. They're working for me because it's my dues that are paying your salary.
That's right.
Okay. So last week, I sent Neil the segment of the interview I had with attorney Ken Feinberg, whose job is all about arbitration, and, well, primarily mediation. And we discussed mediation and arbitration outside the realm of real estate. And I made the mistake of asking a question that I didn't know the answer, of seeing what he thought about the arbitration paragraph in the purchase agreement that we have with the California Association of Realtors. And he, in fact, started to say that he didn't know if he'd sign it. So I went back and forth with some reasons why he should. And I think he, do you remember, did he kind of back down and say maybe he would sign it?
I don't recall him backing down.
Okay. We'll have to listen to the tape. But so I sent it to Neil, and Neil came back and said that I misspoke. So what did I do?
Well, what you did was you stated very well, actually, the arguments that I had previously made to you for why one would want to, or why it's beneficial for one buyer or seller to initial the arbitration clause and make arbitration a part of the agreement between the buyer and seller. So that part was great. Where you misspoke was you stated that it was CAR's position that arbitration is a favored method of resolving dispute. And that is not the case. We have the clause in our contract. It is an optional clause. And CAR does not take a position on whether parties should or should not initial it.
Okay. And that's important because it's extremely important because when you're representing buyers and sellers and you're out there, you never want to imply that this is endorsed, this is what you should do. As you said, it's a separate paragraph that needs to be initialed. And boy, does anyone know what percentage of contracts they are, in fact, initialed? Because when I'm dealing with buyers and sellers, they'll look at that and they'll go, oh, yeah, I'm used to that, or maybe with their brokerage firm. And almost everybody just immediately signs it. Every once in a while, someone might hesitate. Do we know?
I do not have any statistical data, but anecdotally, what I hear is very similar to what you hear, which is most of the time the parties, buyer and sellers, wind up initialing the clause and incorporating arbitration into their agreement. The one regular exception I hear to that, I think, is very typical, and it was kind of evidenced by your discussion with Mr. Feinberg, which is attorneys, I always hear, will refuse to initial the arbitration agreement. They think that they are better off going to court.
And they are, because they don't have to pay anyone.
Well, not necessarily. They just because they go to court doesn't mean they're going to be representing themselves.
It's true. That's true. I've seen that. But what happens is when if a buyer is an attorney and he doesn't sign that and the seller sees it, they come back and they go, no, no way. This is going to be part of the contract. I don't want to leave myself vulnerable to someone who can work his own time and bat me around like a cat bats around a mouse.
Well, I think another thing sellers think when they see that a buyer attorney does not sign it, they start questioning the integrity of that buyer in the first place. That if this person is already thinking about how they're going to avoid or evade an arbitration requirement and that they want a more cumbersome process to resolve disputes, that gives sellers some reasons to think twice about that buyer's offer.
Yes, yes. Gives them pause. Well, thanks. Thanks for spanking me on the air. And thanks for complimenting me. I remember distinctly your whole informational position or argument as to what's good and bad about it. So I just need to remember not to say we're endorsing it or anyone's endorsing it. Before we get into the contract, Neil Kalin is one of the core attorneys that helps write and rewrite the contract and changes. Is that accurate?
That is.
Okay. And so we're going to talk about acceptance. Seems like it would be a simple question to know when acceptance of the contract is, and we have something called confirmation of acceptance. But I have a question for you.
Yes.
Front yard of a house, side yard of a house, and a backyard of a house. Front yard is two words. Side yard is two words, but backyard is one word. Why is that?
Wow, we didn't prepare this one in advance.
All right, we'll come back to that. So let's talk about the contract. Let's talk about acceptance of the contract, and then talk about this confirmation of acceptance and the distinction.
And I think maybe, you know, you ought to have like an English professor on one day to answer that question.
It has nothing to do with you in real estate. That's what we call stump the guest question that I used to use all the time. And I always made sure I asked something that the guest would never answer. So thank you for keeping the streak alive.
You're welcome.
So acceptance of the contract, confirmation of acceptance. Why do we have both? And what is that about?
Well, ordinarily, in order to get into a binding contract, one has to effectively communicate their acceptance. So a buyer makes an offer, the seller has to communicate acceptance of the offer. The mere signing of the offer in and of itself is not a communication of acceptance. And there's a very old rule, it's called the mailbox rule, that basically says, once you put it in the mailbox, it's presumed that you've communicated your acceptance, even though the other side, the buyer's not going to receive that acceptance for what could be days, right? You know, depending on how quickly the delivery is made. So CAR contractually changed what's known as the common law rule. And we say explicitly in the contract that in order to have the contract be binding, so let's just do a straight buyer-seller. Buyer makes an offer, seller accepts. Buyer signs. Of course, we do not have a binding agreement at that time. Seller signs. We do not have a binding agreement at that point either. It has to be communicated back to the buyer. So the buyer has to actually receive the document with the seller's signature on it. One way to prove that is in the body of the purchase agreement. There is a clause, and the clause is titled Confirmation of Acceptance. So if that is initialed, then we know the buyer actually received it, or possibly the buyer's agent received it for the buyer. But whether that clause gets initialed or not is not the issue. The issue is, did the buyer actually receive it, and how do you prove it? How do you prove that the buyer or the buyer's agent actually received the document with the seller's signature? Because that event of receiving it, that event is what creates the binding contract.
Hmm. And the agent representing the entity that is the final loop, the agent can sign confirmation of acceptance. Does he have to be named in the contract? You know that little clause at the end?
Yes, there is a clause in the expiration of offer paragraph where if you want to give the agent authority to receive that signed offer, it could be a counteroffer as well, then you actually have to name that licensee in that particular paragraph.
Right. And so let's say confirmation of acceptance is not signed at all.
Okay.
But the agent has a log and says that, and has an email that he sends, let's say the seller's agent sending to the buyer's agent, saying, congratulations, we have signed acceptance. Attached is the signed acceptance. And I'm copying you and I'm copying escrow. And so you have an email sent showing that the principal has accepted the buyer's offer. Is that okay?
No, because all that's establishing is that, in your example, the seller signed and the seller sent it. But it's the sending does not in and of itself create the binding agreement. It's the actual receipt by the other party. So what the agent would be better off doing, I mean, there's various things they could do. To me, the best thing to do is to call up the agent on the other side and say, hey, I just sent you an acceptance. My client's very excited to be in contract with your client. Did you get it? And then if the other agent says yes, then the first agent would say, hey, would you mind sending me, you know, some confirmation of that? Send, you know, initial that paragraph in the contract. Send me an email. Send me a text saying you've received the contract with my client's signature on it.
That's...
If the other agent says no, you know, no, I'm not going to do that. Yes, I have it. I have it in my hand, but I'm not going to do that for you. Then if I'm the first agent, what I would do is I say, well, okay, but I'm going to document our conversation whereby you admitted you received it.
The first agent is going to go, oh, my God, I made a mistake.
Okay,
I want to deal with this agent. That, right? What the hell's going on? I refuse to sign confirmation of acceptance. I don't think that's ever happened. We've been using it. So you have this conversation, and the phone call is the real answer. I remember when I first started in this business in 1988, talking with Neil Kalin. One of the, have you been in working for CAR since 1988? I seem to recall we had the same anniversary.
I started at CAR in 1987, January 2nd, 1987.
Ah, you beat me. So he's involved integrally? No, what's that word?
Integrally?
With the writing and updating of the purchase agreement for the California Association of Realtors purchase contract. And so when I first started, my trainer there said to use that phone call in another example. Let's say you have a counteroffer out. You're representing the seller, and you sent a counteroffer to the buyer.
Okay.
And then if the buyer accepts and communicates to you that the buyer has accepted, you have a contract.
That's right.
But if the seller gets an offer for way more money and wants to accept it, he told me, call that agent and immediately say, the seller withdraws the counteroffer. And if you get to say that before the buyer says we've accepted it, can you get out and stop the
It's not that you get out. You never got in the first place.
You never got in.
Right.
So the seller screams, wait, I signed this. I accepted it.
The buyer now is you did it.
The buyer says, I accepted this. How can you have to accept it. I signed it. But if that agent didn't communicate it to the listing agent and the listing agent communicated first to the buyer's agent that, hey, we're withdrawing the counter, then you're going to have a very unhappy buyer.
That's correct.
I don't know how often that really happens.
Yeah, I don't know. We actually have a form so that you can, if you're with the listing agent, you're representing the seller, you can actually document that in writing. I would still make the phone call, and then I would simultaneously send that form.
Right.
Withdrawing the counteroffer.
Okay, so the answer, the bottom line is communicate. You could walk into the office of the buyer's agent and hand them the contract and say, congratulations, you sold a house. And then you can ask them right there to sign the confirmation of acceptance. But we do that, and we communicate it on that day and then get that confirmation signed. So that seems to work. I have a note down here. How is it different with a backup offer? But I think that was related to something else, wasn't it? Wasn't that related to the time frames, when time frames commence?
Right, because in terms of accepting the offer or the backup offer, the acceptance process is no different, whether it's an offer or a backup offer. The only thing that's different is once a backup offer is in place, the terms of the backup offer really don't start until the primary contract has been released. That's the whole point. You're in backup. You're not in first place. You're in backup.
So nothing commences until they're notified that the first offer has been canceled, and now you're in primary position, and now time frames. But there was some.
Right. Well, one of the issues with the backup, remember, you actually have a binding contract. The backup buyer and the seller have a binding contract. The binding contract is not going to come to fruition until the seller and the first buyer's contractual relationship comes to an end. But even though the seller and the backup buyer are in contract, until something happens with that first buyer, the backup buyer can say, I'm tired of waiting around and I'm going to exercise my right to cancel. So there is a contract, but there's a right to cancel it.
The buyer can cancel any time, but in the contract, the seller is obligated until the date that's put in there. Seller can't cancel.
Right. The seller does not have the unilateral right to get out.
All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back,
but it won't matter because if the seller goes forward with the first buyer, that backup will kind of cancel on its own terms anyway.
True. But again, if the seller then got even a better offer than his primary offer and the backup offer and wanted to take it, he really can't, because if the first offer, primary offer, cancels, he's obligated to the backup offer.
Yeah, and when we come back, if you want to discuss what happens if you have more than one backup, we can do that.
More than one backup. And then there was something else about that. I think we were talking about when time frames commence, and it was something about disclosures, but we'll talk about that during the commercial break, and we'll come back and finish up on backup offers and then a right of rescission on a contract. And I had mentioned, we have something on loan contingency. Basically, Neil could be here all day. So we'll fit in what we can. Mark Schneiman's Radio Real Estate, RadioRealEstate.com. You're listening to Neil Kalin, California Association of Realtor Attorney.